Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, July 22nd, day number 203 of 2013. And tonight we're going to pick up on this great topic, a very important topic in the country right now, and that is the bankruptcy of the city of Detroit. We're going to be doing that with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. We're going to be looking at the problems that led the city to this bankruptcy and maybe some of the lessons, some of the signals here for the rest of the American economy. I mean, is this a sign of things to come? Are there going to be more Detroits down the road? You know, what could maybe some cities learn from Detroit? So we're going to get into a lot of that tonight with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. Just a quick note about my book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. The book is available in print, available in Kindle, and in our website. You can now get a copy of the book dedicated to you or to someone that you want to dedicate it to. So, for example, if you have a teacher in college or high school who was a Cuban and you remember that man or that lady fondly, well, get him a copy of the book. Just give me their name and address, and I'll ship it to them, and we'll dedicate the book to your former teacher, your former professor. This is something that I think would bring a great deal of joy to them. And obviously it would bring you a great deal of joy to remember your good Cuban teacher from your school or high school or college days. So go to CubanosInWisconsin.com and look for that little button, and we'll be happy to do a special request for you. On this day in history, one of the great criminals of the 20th century, a fellow by the name of John Dillinger, I think they've made a few movies about him, he was killed today by federal agents in 1934. I guess they had a little bit of a run-in, and they knew each other, and the agents killed Mr. Dillinger, who had robbed 11 banks and stolen $300,000 by the time he was killed. So he was very productive, I guess, the wrong way. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's say hello to Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Good evening.
Absolutely. And got to ask you about your book. You're an author, of course, an economist, and you've got a book out there about UN Agenda 21. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, it's still doing very well at Amazon on the bestseller list since October of last year, and it's the best education for $2.99, the price of a cup of coffee, about all the zoning and smart metering and all the issues and smart growth and environmentalists that are plaguing our cities and our industries, which incidentally is one of the problems that has affected Detroit and has contributed to its demise. So
yeah,
it's a good idea to read about it, including the education of our children.
That's exactly right. And we have a link to your website on the show information where we have your name, and click on that, and that'll take you to your website where people can order the book as well as look at the archives of some of the many, many articles that you've written for many different topics over the years. Well, the topic tonight is Detroit, and as I'm sure a lot of people in the audience know, the city of Detroit filed for bankruptcy, and, you know, I saw some of the men who are going to be engineering the bankruptcy, the manager of the bankruptcy, the governor of Michigan, the mayor of Detroit, who, by the way, used to be an NBA player. I had not I didn't realize that until I saw his picture or the interview on TV. And it does appear that you know, at least the governor of Michigan wants to basically do this by themselves, and we'll get into a little bit later into some of the options. But some of the reasons, if you were, you know, telling some students in your class when you were a college professor, if one of your students raised his hand and said, "Hey, professor, what happened in Detroit?" What three or four things would you tell that student about what happened to the city of Detroit, which, by the way, was one of the great American cities of the first half of the 20th century? I mean, one of the giants of the American metropolitan area. So what three or four things would you say?
Well, having been a college professor for 30 years, I have to admit that it would be very difficult for me to kind of look at just three or four things. I would probably have a discussion of an hour or more, but I would probably start with a description of what Detroit used to be, which was the Paris of the West, and of course the Paris, the city of lights. And I would give them the description that now, from the 87,000 street lights that were functioning in Detroit, now they're down to 46,000. So apparently it's no longer the city of lights, it is the city of blight. It is what we're looking at in the future for many other cities in the country, not necessarily for the reasons that Detroit went down in terms of the auto industry, but for some of the other reasons, which some of which include goals of UN Agenda 21. But the number one problem I would, or reason I would put it to unions, and number two, I would put it to Democrat rule or lack of political competition. The Democrats have ruled the city since 1962. There has not been a Republican mayor since then. So I would probably say Democrats and the unions, and there were other smaller things, but in the grand scheme of things, they added to a big disaster, and that is bad fiscal management, unaffordable borrowing, state grant schemes, raising taxes, and deferring public pension contributions rather than cutting city spending. So if I want to categorize all of those, I would say overspending, government overspending, which is what we're engaging in at the national level or the federal level.
Right. So I think, you know, I would summarize, and I agree with you, it would take probably an hour, probably 2 hours, probably a whole semester to understand the city of Detroit. But I agree with one very important point that you've made, and that is that this has been basically a one-party city for much of the last 40 or 50 years, where you've had one political party running everything. It's almost to the point that, you know, people, you know who's going to win elections in Detroit. It's always going to be the Democrats. So as a consequence, not only do you have predictable election results, but you also have, I think, a lot of corruption. You know, when you have the Democratic Party and the public sector unions basically in bed together, knowing that they're gonna win, you don't have the kind of diversity, I think, that you need in any kind of political system. And I agree with you. I think the public sector unions and the Democrats, when you put that together, you're going to have a lot of problems. I think if I could just detour for a second and look at another place that could be a future Detroit, we could be looking at the state of California, because they have the exact same problem, you know, with one party rule basically and public sector unions. But let me say something else about the city of Detroit too, because, you know, in the 50s and 60s for a little bit, this was a city that used to make cars. You know, some of the great names in the car industry were there, and now most of these cars are being built somewhere else. I mean, I don't think they make many in the city of Detroit anymore. Companies move out of the state, not even out of the country, but to other states like Texas, Virginia, and so on. And would you agree with me that right to work has really, or the unions and no right to work has really hurt Michigan?
Oh, I agree. They have the unions were very powerful. They even had public sector unions. And you tell me why you have to have the public sector unions, who are you trying to protect yourself from? The public, who is paying your salaries,
right,
and your benefits.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. But yes, I agree with you. And the $50 an hour salary for someone with a high school education is a pretty powerful wage when you consider that in the right-to-work states, workers began in the auto industry that were making the same cars at $15, $16 an hour, and the salaries were adequate for the cost of housing and cost of living in general in that area. So, yes, I blame the union, and, of course, I blame the corruption. Yes, Detroit made cars, and they've had the American middle class dominance for years and years, but there have been decades of population flight from the area, which of course diminished the tax base. And because they have not cut their spending, and all the pensioners and have had a very good pensions promised to them, rightfully so. I mean, they did earn them, and they also had Cadillac health care plans. The money was not there really to fund all these lavish pensions based on the diminished tax base. As a matter of fact, out of the $18 billion that they owe the city of Detroit, half of the city's liabilities, that would be $9 billion, are for pension plans and retiree health care costs. Then $5.3 billion, it's a first call on debt owed to water and sewer. So it's obviously an issue of mismanagement as well.
Right. And another thing, too, that I think has afflicted Detroit as well as Chicago and many of these other big cities is the public sector's teachers union, in this case, in bed with the Democrat Party, so that there are no reforms in public education. Public education is basically, you know, a mess. So families say, I'm not going to send my kids to those public
yes,
schools.
Yes, it is. I agree. Sorry to interrupt, but 7%
sure.
of eighth graders are proficient in reading. 7%,
yeah.
So that means 93% cannot read by eighth grade. It takes police about an hour to respond to calls, or 58 minutes, the average. So it's ridiculous. Where
right.
is the accountability? They have dumbed down education because they have these unions. They cannot fire bad teachers, and there are quite a few bad teachers out there, and I don't mean to criticize them unduly because I've met some very good teachers in my career, but the majority are not.
Right. No, and I think this is such an important point because you see this, we saw this in Milwaukee, when they were having the union problems last year in Wisconsin, you know, where you have public school systems that are simply failing the parents, they're failing the community, but yet they continue to operate, they continue to get budgets. There's no accountability, like you were saying. Nobody gets fired, and that's another problem. I saw something too about Detroit in one of the articles that I saw that, you know, like the garbage collection and all these other essential services that we associate with a city are just not there. I mean, it's like you're living in a dysfunctional place. So if you have the option, if you have the opportunity to get the heck out and move to a suburb, you're going to do so. Unfortunately,
yeah,
not everybody has that chance. Not everybody has that chance, and they stay.
Actually wanting to build a wall between themselves and Detroit, which I think is ridiculous. It's taking a little bit far, but they want to protect themselves from crime. The crime rate has gone up 79% in 2011, and when I mean crime, I don't mean ordinary crime. I mean justifiable homicide. The police only works 8 hours a day from 8 to 5. Would you want to live in such a place? So I can understand why they would want to build a wall.
You're exactly right, and that's why people want to leave. That's why they get out if they have a chance.
Well, 30% of Detroit's 140 square miles are vacant or deserted. There are over 33,000 vacant homes and 90,000 vacant lots, and they keep bulldozing them. And if you live on a street where you're the only house that's inhabited, they make you leave, and they bulldoze your house as well. 60% of children live in poverty. Detroit does not have one chain supermarket left. That's abject poverty. It's very, very sad. And yet the global corporatists are building a 25 million light rail in Detroit. Why, in this failing city, why would you want to do that?
Exactly. No, you're exactly right. I mean, if you look at, and I would invite anybody to, I think you can go online, and because I went online and was able to see some of these pictures of Detroit. I mean, it is heartbreaking. You feel like you're watching a city that has just been bombed. Like, remember the European cities with these pictures back in, after World War II, where they took these pictures of these cities? And that's what Detroit looks like. I mean, it is a truly a depressing thing that this would be happening in the United States of America to a city that a generation ago was like, in many ways, the definition of American capitalism. So it's really a shame. Well, let's talk a little bit about...
Well, if I may add this, Detroit was... the town that perfected the assembly line, and they did have a middle-class lifestyle based on manufacturing. They made tanks, planes, cars. You had Motown Records. But what has happened, the government actually failed to protect manufacturers when they started shipping or outsourcing our manufacturing jobs overseas. And two-thirds of majority in Congress is to blame because they voted for NAFTA, GATT, CAFTA, and bank deregulation. And that contributed to the problems as well. NAFTA is the North American Free Trade Agreement, which started in January 1st, 1994. And, of course, you had problems in Detroit prior to that, but this exacerbated the problem because a lot of the good-paying jobs, the $50 an hour jobs, went overseas to really cheap labor. Then the GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which regulated the international trade, eliminated tariffs, and they advocated for free trade, which also contributed to the woes of government in general, because tariffs have helped in the past pay the national debt. And then you had CAFTA, the Central America Free Trade Agreement, which is kind of an extension of NAFTA. That one was signed in 2004. But I'm not saying that these are the primary reason for Detroit's problems, but they have contributed tremendously. And here is one other issue that has not been discussed much on the news, which is because the media, the mainstream media, keeps lying to the people, and Detroiters apparently don't understand that the media is not their friend. And that is the cap and trade. This administration cap and trade policies are targeting the deindustrialization of our country via executive orders that carry UN Agenda 21 forward. And by doing so, there will be many more Detroits coming because they are implemented green zones, wildland, smart growth, saving the planet from fake or non-existent global warming, which are economic growth inhibitors. And so other cities will follow, but for different reasons, not the auto industry, but they will follow a similar path. And think about cap and trade. It will eliminate the use of 80% of energy. Can you drive to work with less percent energy? Can you turn your thermostat 80% lower, or your AC? Can you reduce your gasoline consumption by 80%? What about a business if they want to survive? Can you live in high-rise apartments stacked on top of each other? No.
And I think you're exactly right. And of course, as you were indicating, by the time NAFTA came around in the mid to late 90s and all of that, it was just the last dominoes, I guess, if you wanted to put it that way. But yeah, exactly. That's probably a better example. But the question is, what do we do now? I think we are where we are, and there are, I guess, there's two attitudes. One by this gentleman, Steve Stratner, is it, who wrote in the New York Times saying that, you know, we should bail out Detroit because, you know, this is like, you know, we bail out, you know, people in hurricanes, so why shouldn't we bail out Detroit, which is a little bit silly because, you know, hurricanes are acts of nature. I mean, Detroit is not that. But so you bailout is one option. I don't think bailout is going to happen because I just don't think we have the political will to bail out Detroit. You could also have other cities, too, that start calling then. So then the next option is to let the city work its way through these problems. And I'm kind of leaning in that direction. I think that's what should happen. But I would like to see the city of Detroit become almost like, you know, an example of a city. Hey, you can invest. You can come in and open businesses, and we're going to let you invest. We're going to have all kinds of tax abatements so that you can do all of that. Would you like to see that kind of an approach in Detroit?
I would like that very much because I am all for free markets. And I think that the governor of the state has made a step in the right direction, or the state of Michigan, because they passed the right to work law. It's the 24th state to do so. But this was in December of last year. So they kind of did it at the last minute, so to speak. But yes, I think once that falls and businesses are willing to invest and are not being regulated to death, and if the political environment changes where the Democrats are not constantly in control, keeping everything down and the population so misinformed, you can have real progress.
The problem
is that a lot of the population has there's a lot of drug use in the city. And Detroit is also the most race-conscious city in America. Blacks blame overwhelmingly whites for their problems. And there's environmental and health warfare in the city because they have lead water pipes like Rome. They give a lot of Ritalin for children. I've read somewhere that they have a really high rate of prescription drug Ritalin and for antidepressants. And they have poor diets, and it kind of leaves people confused and unable to make proper decisions. And the mainstream media doesn't help them either with the misinformation that they are subjected to constantly.
Yeah, it's just not a very good situation there. And the racial problem that you indicated is a big one there because, unfortunately, some of the black leaders in Detroit and many of these large cities are really arsonists. They're racial arsonists. They're people who like to use their microphones rather than to bring people together to divide people by race. And I think that has contributed to the kind of poisonous atmosphere in a city like Detroit, where a lot of people who maybe wanted to help and a lot of people who maybe wanted to tell the truth, you're immediately accused of being a racist or whatever if you challenge any of the power structure. So I would like to see the city turn around. But let me ask you one more point here, and this is kind of a difficult question because we don't know exactly everything that's out there in the future. But can you see what's happening in Detroit? Can you see other cities going in this direction? Can you see other major cities saying, hey, you know, let's do that because that's the easiest way to get out of these pensions, which is really bad for the policemen and the firemen, you know, who after all those years put in their time?
Well, I can see other cities going into bankruptcy, particularly if the federal government, our federal government, is going to bail them out. They say, why not us? Well, Jefferson County, Alabama, is the second largest municipal bankruptcy, which they have a slightly smaller population than the Detroit, but they only have $4 billion in liabilities as opposed to $18 billion of Detroit. So that's almost five times as much. So yes, I can see that. There's another possibility. Perhaps Detroit can seek outside help. They can get a loan, for example, from the World Bank. The problem is that if they don't adjust their spending patterns and they don't adjust their behavior and the control of the unions and of the Democrat Party, in a few years they'll be back where they started and they'll have to default on this loan, and what will you do then? So that's another possibility.
But a couple of and maybe I'm repeating something you said earlier, I don't remember, but a couple of cities in California have already gone bankrupt or have filed for bankruptcy. Now, they're smaller cities, granted, but this is not, you know, this is something that could happen. I mean, you could see a wave of these things because a lot of, you know, a lot of the city councils and a lot of the city administrators are, you know, they're looking at their cities and they're saying, we got these pensions, we cannot write these checks, we got these services, we cannot deliver. What are we going to do? So, you file bankruptcy, well, and at least you maybe you get your way out of you don't get yourself out of the problem, but at least you buy some time and maybe try to find some structure. I don't know.
Well, the municipal defaults are by law Chapter 9. They can't file Chapter 11 like corporations, so the restructuring is different. But there was one of the articles you sent me, I think it was the liberal from the New York Times, was quoting Kevin Orr, and he was saying that if the state assumes responsibility for the $1.25 billion in reinvestment spending that Detroit's emergency manager asked for, this Kevin Orr, and he included it in his proposed budget, the city could use those freed up funds to trim the potential pension reduction of retirees. So there again, I come to what you said earlier. Some of these people, or most of them, have earned their pensions. Some of them have, you know, unusually generous pensions after a lot less years of work than you and I would put in. But then some of them were involved in dangerous work like
right.
The police and the firemen.
The police, the firemen, and, you know, many teachers too who worked for a long time. I mean, it is.
The teachers' salaries are extremely generous in Democrat states like Illinois and Michigan. They usually make at least twice as much as teachers in blue states, for example. I was appalled when I heard that a teacher in New York with a four-year college degree makes $120,000 a year in pension. I didn't even make that much when I was working full time, and
right.
I have a PhD. So.
Yeah. Well, of course, and that
that's
goes
excessive.
Back to what we were. But that kind of goes back to, you know, the public sector unions again. You know, negotiating those kinds of arrangements with basically Democrats running those cities, and now you know the invoice is coming, and now it's time to pay, and many of these cities do not have the money to pay. But I would tell you if to wrap it up tonight, if anybody goes to that Time magazine article, I think it was in March, Time magazine had this special feature with all kinds of photographs from Detroit, and to me it's so depressing to see those pictures of Detroit. It just made me very depressed to see an American city, any American city, but especially Detroit, look like that. Well, let's say one quick thing about your book, Agenda 21. You can get it at Amazon. Why don't you say a quick word about it?
Yes, UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy. It's available at Amazon on the bestseller list and wherever else they sell books online. It has short chapters on every possible topic where Agenda 21 is found, including education, museums, environmentalist, high school diplomas, college, zoning, private property, your home, smart meters, your use of electricity, and anything that you take for granted in your daily lives. And they're
That's
all
right.
dictated by the United Nations.
That's right. And it even impacts Detroit, as you were saying earlier today. Well, let me thank you again for joining us tonight and for giving us a pretty good, I know it's a complicated topic, but giving us a good lesson tonight on the city of Detroit and how we got there. And we're going to keep an eye on Detroit over the next few months, probably a few years, as that city comes out of this. But we wish it the best. But you know, I forgot to say thing at the top. You know, I forgot to say one thing at the top of the show, and I wanted to congratulate Prince William and what is Kate? I know is her name, but I forgot her
Kate
title.
Middleton.
But what is her title? Duchess.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
The royals.
Yeah, I guess I don't follow them either. But I do. I do know they had a baby because that was the news of the afternoon. So we wish the mother and the baby a good night's sleep. And hopefully we'll have a chance to see the baby. I'm sure that's going to be a baby that many in the media will want to photograph. I hope they protect the baby from all the paparazzi or whatever they're called. But thank you so much for joining us tonight. Have a great evening.
Thank you,
and we will see you the next week. Thank you so much.
Until next time.
Until the next time, Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe, author, economist, always enjoy chatting with her about the state of the American economy, and in this case, the city of Detroit and the bankruptcy in Detroit. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're going to continue our programs on the bankruptcy of Detroit and what's happening up in Detroit. We're going to continue that tomorrow on Tuesday's program, and we're going to have a little different take on Tuesday. Today we heard from an economist, the author and economist, Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. Tomorrow we're going to talk to Frank Burke, who actually lived in Detroit as a businessman, and we're going to talk a little bit about the business view of all of this and, you know, what Frank thinks about building the city or putting the city back together after the bankruptcy. Well, we will look at some ideas as to how to put the city of Detroit back together. Thank you so much to everybody for listening tonight. We wish you a wonderful evening, a wonderful day. We'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas saying goodbye.